gray skies, brown slush. The point in the year when you might begin to think the snow is not quite so picturesque. President's Day and Groundhog Day are not the sort of holidays that make you want to get out your dancing shoes. But February brings us Valentine's Day, and a day dedicated to love can redeem any month, no matter how chilling the wind. Valentine's Day. One of my greatest childhood treasures is this plastic pin, a deer with a heart hanging around its neck, a Valentine from my father. In college, I would get up early on Valentine's Day to craft personalized greetings out of computer paper and pipe cleaners, or cards of pink tissue paper covered in sparkly stickers, each red foil heart a statement of regard. But somewhere along the way, my view of Valentine's Day shifted. Is Valentine's really about love, or is it merely another Hallmark moment crafted to cause would-be squires to buy small fuzzy bears that lock in perpetual magnetic embrace? My first clue that the things of Valentine's Day, the cards and the chocolates, were mere trappings was the year my husband and I ended up at Osco Drugs. There, we showed each other the cards we would have bought. We are still married. Did the busyness of life override the intention of the day? Did it get lost in the over-commercialism that plagues Christmas, making me some sort of Valentine's Grinch? Oh, don't get me wrong, I'm a fool for love, and a day that celebrates it, a month, a year, a life dedicated to the idea of love. I love the entire concept of mindfully and intentionally expressing our sentiment to those in our lives. It's just that Valentine's Day seems to have become a point where expectation and reality diverge. A day that can make you feel left out or not quite good enough if you don't have that special someone. And worse, a day that celebrates paper Valentines. A day that perpetuates the myth that falling in love is being in love. A day honoring that stomach fluttering, heart pounding feeling that romance is love. But mature love, the love that grows in committed relationships, bears little resemblance to that first blush. Mature love, at its best, incorporates some of those feelings of early romance, the goofy smile that comes over your face when that certain someone walks in the room, or the warmth that flows through you at their embrace. But loving is not falling in love. It is bigger. It is fuller. It is a love that does not come from romantic dinners and champagne. It is forged in fire through the trials, the boredom, the shared tears and laughter, the decisions and doubts and depths of life together. It takes work and the willingness to extend yourself beyond your own life. Taking into account that you are not one, no matter how romantic that might sound, you are two, with different thoughts and desires, customs, dislikes, and expectations. And if you can still meet each other with all those differences, you will know true love. If, instead of giving yourself up to the other, you extend yourself to meet the other, then you will have a basis for a life together. When when we buy the myth peddled by paperback novels, soap operas, and romantic comedies. We set ourselves up for disappointment. We put ourselves where expectations and reality diverge. How many newly married couples experience a post-wedding letdown? A letdown that leaves them questioning their choices, their love, their commitment, and even their understanding of life. It is the new topic of psychologists and self-help authors. Suddenly, books on the phenomenon of post-wedding depression abound, written by therapists whose offices host a steady flow of disaffected mates. Their common theme is that young couples, and especially brides, make such a fantasy of the courtship and the wedding that they are hard hit by the reality of being married. Here are these two people, the center of attention from the day of the engagement to the day of the wedding. Parties, showers, luncheons, details to be made and beautiful gowns to be bought, flowers and photographers, the honeymoon to a paradise for two, dreams to dream, and that special someone to adore. It is indeed heady stuff, this stuff of Valentine's Day. But then reality. The party dress goes to the cleaners, and you're left with 200 champagne glasses to wash. There are jobs to get to, groceries to buy, schedules to coordinate. Your folks are mine for Thanksgiving. The pressures of earning a living and of making a life. When the romance wears thin, there has to be something deeper. And that's where the love comes in. That's where commitment and caring comes in. And that's where 50% of marriages fail. I'm not saying that all marriages should be saved or can be saved. It is the rare person among us who has not experienced a relationship, romantic or otherwise, which is best off ended. I am, however, saying that when we set an unrealistic view of love, we set ourselves up for disappointment and doubt and divorce. Our contemporary culture presents us with neither realistic expectations of love nor a particularly exalted view of marriage. From movies that promise fairy tale love between the Wall Street tycoon and the chauffeur's daughter, to songs that avow the impossible depth and breadth of feeling. Possibly the greatest cultural blow to true love that I can remember in my lifetime is from the book and movie Love Story, whose tagline assured us that love means never having to say you're sorry. Oh, I don't think so. The sentiment is, as one film reviewer called it, just plain stupid. The fantasy of romantic truth, 24 frames per second. Even our beloved paper Valentines, the Valentine card, meant to convey sincere regard, joins in perpetuating skewed views of love. Given the price of greeting cards, I brought a statistically invalid sampling with me. But this card is a pretty nice example of the genre of poor expectations. All I'll ever need is all your love. Happy Valentine's Day. Okay, here's the Grinch part. This card does not express sentiment, I love you, but places a demand, love me or I shall wither and die. Further, it states that I need nothing else in my life but the devotion of one person. Unlikely. Few of us are so singularly focused that we need no other relationship, no other interactions of friends and family. It implies eternity, always a chancy thing in its best state, but this card promises an eternity locked in dysfunctional relationship. Now, contemporary culture presents us with neither realistic expectations of love nor an exalted view of marriage. Marriage, like so much else in our society, has become a commodity worth apparently $1 million. In the name of entertainment and cash, we are willing to compete to marry a complete stranger as long as he's worth $1 million. We are told that given a pool of 12 strangers, $1 million and 8 weeks in prime time, that eternal happiness can be ours. And with the program, my big, fat, obnoxious fiancé, we have perhaps hit bottom, making a thorough mockery of love and commitment. Now, I've never actually seen this show, and I generally think it's a bad idea to decry anything you haven't actually witnessed. But I feel pretty safe in asserting that the producers and participants of this show have no interest in upholding the sanctity of marriage. Now, of course, reality TV has nothing to do with reality, so I don't know why I even expect it. But the state of the estate is hardly more robust off screen. During a recent, particularly tedious visit to the dentist's office, I had the dubious pleasure of flipping through several issues of People magazine. Following on Britney Spears' heartwarming 55-hour marriage, one writer reviewed a long list of celebrity marriages that lasted less than a year. He finally conferred the title on Miss Spears, nosing out Rudolph Valentino's 6-hour marriage in 1919, because apparently the wheels of justice frowned slower in 1919, and it took 2 years to finalize Valentino's divorce. Whichever contender takes the title, I have to say that a marriage measured in hours is perhaps lacking a certain spiritual connection. You will not be shocked to learn that Elizabeth Taylor, front-runner in the most married category, also makes a credible showing in the brevity category, with two marriages lasting less than a year. Of course, to be married 8 times in 4 decades, you can't linger too long. The absurdity of it gets downright humorous. But in all seriousness, this is the institution that we are told must be safeguarded by not allowing gay and lesbian persons to participate in it. Please. Heaven forbid that people with decades-long committed relationships should be seen as married and be granted the legal rights of marriage. That would certainly make a mockery of this august estate. Clearly, my frustration over this subject has evolved into sarcasm. So let me share what Peter Gomes, chaplain at Harvard, wrote in last week's Sunday Globe. To restrict the definition of marriage, he wrote, will do nothing to restore the difficult circumstances of modern marriage. Divorce will not be halted, abuse will not be eliminated, frivolous heterosexual liaisons such as the recent publicity stunt of Britney Spears will still be lawful, and annulments will still be sought and obtained in church courts. Nothing will be done to save marriage, and yet in the name of doing so, incalculable, retrogressive, and even punitive damage will be done to those of our fellow citizens who under the civil law crave the legitimization of their loving relationships. The defense of marriage demands much more than legislative manipulation, enshrining the status quo. End quote. Well said, and I recommend the rest of the article to you as a worthy discussion of marriage and of civil rights. The one question I have yet to hear an answer to from an opponent of gay marriage is this: what possible harm does it do you others are allowed to marry. As my mother would put it, what skin is it off your nose? To say that it is against scripture is both inaccurate, a whole other sermon, and irrelevant. We do not live in a theocracy. Separation of church and state is still alive and kicking. And marriage, at least in Massachusetts, has been, since the time of the Puritans, a civil, not a religious affair. If you have or have heard a better response to the question of what possible harm gay marriage would do, I urge you to share it with me because I am truly baffled. I also hope that if you are as stumped as I am, that you will contact your senator today or tomorrow regarding the Defense of Marriage Act pending in New Hampshire, or attend the Senate committee hearing on Tuesday at Concord State House. Details are available in coffee hour. Allowing New Hampshire to disallow civil unions and marriages recognized by other states is moving in the wrong direction. UUs have been at the center of the fight in Vermont and in Massachusetts. Let's see if we cannot have as strong a voice here in New Hampshire. For love is important to everyone. As much as the state may regulate and culture manipulate, they change, not love. Love is a basic human need and a basic human instinct. When we release the myth, we are free to embrace the love. We are free to love ourself and the other. Free to love Valentine's Day, not for its tokens, but for its opportunities. For Valentine's Day and every day, I wish you the joy and the challenge of real love. Embrace the day and the sentiment. Make tissue paper Valentines and make sure the people in your life know the depth of your caring. Move beyond the myth. Embrace the love.